And now it's time for the Earth First Update, all the environmental news you can use. And Uncle Dennis suggests that you have a pencil and paper handy to write down whatever it is you think is newsworthy to you, whether it's a web page or a date and time of something coming up. And here's something coming up. The Earth First Humboldt is planning their Redwood Coast Rendezvous. Come on out to the mountains of Humboldt County for this year's Redwood Coast Rendezvous from June 14th to the 18th. This summer looks like a hot one for direct action against extraction across the continent. Consequently, we'll be focusing on skill sharing and training in order to spread the knowledge of practical blockading techniques, technical rope climbing, more direct action techniques, and campaign organizing. In the Redwood region alone, there are two ongoing direct action campaigns in Willits. The California Highway Patrol and their riot squad can't keep the Little Lake Valley defenders down as tree sits continue to go up in the path of destruction planned for the new Highway 101 bypass around the town and through the ancient trees and redwoods. In northern Humboldt, tree sitters are holding strong in some of the oldest and largest redwoods in the Trinidad area as Green Diamond's logging echoes down from the hills. And if you want more information on the location of any of that, please go to their website, www.earthfirsthumboldt.org. And once again, the Redwood Coast Rendezvous is going to be somewhere in Humboldt County, June 14th through 18th. You're going to have to go to their webpage for information on how to get there. And the 2013 Earth First Round River Rendezvous is going to be held in North Carolina, July 1st through the 8th. The Earth First Round River Rendezvous is the annual gathering of the Earth First movement. Each summer, this week-long campout attracts several hundred Earth Firsters from around the world. The gathering is coordinated by a volunteer committee and includes workshops, campaign discussions, campfire music, and a rally with performers and speakers. Perhaps the most important part of the Round River Rendezvous is the informal networking that goes on. These gatherings are particularly important for developing a cohesive activist network and planning actions at the local level. We are thrilled to announce that Croatan Earth First will be hosting next summer's rendezvous in central North Carolina. The exact location will be announced close to the week of the event. The spot we are choosing should have swimming holes and beautiful woods to hike in. As for new content, we'll be offering more earth skills, plant mushroom identification, and eco-spirituality workshops to this year's gathering, as well as medic trainings. We're looking in for folks to host workshops and to submit ideas for workshops and panels they'd like to see. If you have access to money, please consider donating to our WePay. If you need to contact us regarding the rendezvous, send email to cef@riseup.net. That's cef@riseup.net or croatanearthfirst@gmail.com, croatanearthfirst@gmail.com. And if you want information, including the tentative schedule, anti-oppression statement, and guidelines, please go to 2013summerrondi.wordpress.com. That's 2013summerrondi.wordpress.com. Right now, the planned workshops and trainings include Earth Skills Track, Plant Every Day, which may include wild and edible plants and medicines, foraging, fire making, permaculture and gardening, homesteading, mushroom cultivation and foraging, tree identification, street medic training, you're going to need to RSVP to cef@riseup.net. For the street medic training, there'll be 20 hours of that, and you'll have to commit to it. And there might be some money involved there for supplies. Tree climbing workshop every day, all day. Building tree structures and monopods. Eco spirituality workshops and the work that reconnects, creating resilient communities despite trauma. Panels on biocentrism, animal rights, and Earth First. Nuclear issues in the Southeast. Uniting anti-extraction movements. Updates from the tar sands blockade and the Buffalo Field campaign. Earth First Mechanics Guild teaches you how to fix your car and how to use cars in other ways as well, dismantling them in the case of the zombie apocalypse. Music, dancing, poetry, and performances. Security culture workshops and internet security discussions, direct action and blockades trainings, of course, media liaison and police liaison trainings, anti-oppression trainings, and how to integrate it into your work locally, discussions on decolonizing our movements, Radical Mental Health, What is Earth First for Welcomed Newcomers, Mixed Martial Arts Self-Defense, Mock Arrests and Extraction Exercises, Debunk the Techno Fix, Supporting Eco-Prisoners, Fun, Friends, and Swimming. Hope to see you there. The 2013 Earth First Round River Rendezvous in North Carolina, July 1st through the 8th. And once again, for more information, go to 2013summerrendez.wordpress.com. Here is the Buffalo Field Campaign's update from the field for this week. After last week's extensive report of the government's abuse of America's last wild buffalo, the state and federal agents have returned once again to haze multiple family groups, including many of the same buffalo they have repeatedly harassed in weeks past. Last Thursday, wild bison were forced off of habitats south of Horse Butte, and instead of being hazed into Yellowstone National Park, where Montana's livestock interests insist that they be, they were forced to go to Horse Butte. After that morning haze, the agents left the buffalo and then took the next 4 days off. While the buffalo certainly needed the break, the Montana Department of Livestock Actions call into serious question Montana's unsupported claim that wild bison are a brucellosis threat, brucellosis being the purported reason for such maltreatment of these gentle giants. Apparently, their concern is small enough to have the agents leave town and take a long weekend. But by Tuesday morning, the buffalo had already reclaimed the ground they were evicted from, only to have the agencies repeat the exact same hazing sequence on many of the exact same buffalo. And these family groups were aggressively forced to flee through Gallatin National Forest. As often happens, especially in the case of mother buffalo with their calves, the agents get bluff charged. On Wednesday morning, 12 riders, other livestock inspectors, and the Montana State Vet and law enforcement officers hit Horse Butte. This time they didn't have their helicopter, and the actions and results were the same, proving that the helicopter is an unnecessary, costly, and wasteful tool. 5 Montana Department of Livestock riders and 1 USDA APHIS federal agent trespassed on private property. In Montana, a federal agent coming onto your property uninvited is a very big no-no. Yet here they came, acting like they owned the place, marching on horses through the Yellowstone Village neighborhood, through properties where buffalo are welcome and the Montana Department of Livestock are not. From there, they hazed the buffalo onto the Galanis property, nearly 800 acres of private buffalo-friendly land encompassing Montana's largest buffalo-safe zone. The agents were informed numerous times that they were trespassing and were not welcome. Inflated with arrogance and corrupt with power, they didn't care whose private property rights they violated. They were going to get every last buffalo out of Montana. Agents often run buffalo through fenced areas during hazing operations, particularly on private lands. Some buffalo, if given the time, are lucky enough to make it over gracefully. Some, in their haste to flee, do not. Injuries are common. During Wednesday's operation, Buffalo Field Campaign saw numerous buffalo, adults, and newborn calves limping with injuries. These same buffalo have been repeatedly chased all over the Hebgen Basin in the past 6 weeks through fences, forests, deadfall, mudflats, down gravel roads, over rocky terrain, through swollen rivers, up steep bluffs for miles and miles again and again. On this day, we documented a few baby buffalo limping severely. Informed, the agents nevertheless forced them to move. Even if an animal has an injury that may not have been caused by hazing, it is certainly exacerbated by hazing, and the actions of these agents threaten their very survival. The limping buffalo would have to travel on their sore legs for more than 8 miles without rest in just a few chaotic hours. Wednesday's haze ended barely within the boundary of Yellowstone National Park, and the buffalo patrols will be on the front lines documenting yet another hazing operation against the buffalo. Buffalo have a great many friends, and sometimes those friends come to their aid directly, right at the moment of greatest need. Over the weekend, some folks had noticed a young bull buffalo with his head caught in an oddly shaped fence. She noticed buffalo volunteers, Noah and David, and called for help. Noah and David were a bit taken aback with what needed to be done, but aimed to help this bull. His mama was close by and seemed to sense that they were there to help. No lifting of the tail, no shaking of the head, she simply stood aside and let them approach. They managed to free the young bull. It was a great day for the buffalo and his family. Announcing the Buffalo Field Campaign's Free Buffalo Museum, Buffalo Field Campaign is pleased to announce that they are making a transition this summer from tabling inside Yellowstone National Park to opening a free buffalo museum just outside the west entrance in the town of West Yellowstone, Montana. The museum will take you on an incredible buffalo journey through their storied history and amazing natural lives to their current plight and the efforts of the people standing in their defense. The museum will showcase photos, artwork, images, and video, as well as buffalo items you can touch, plus, of course, Buffalo Field Campaign merchandise. Standing guard and welcoming all will be our ever-popular Buffaloon, a giant inflatable buffalo who will lead the way to Buffalo Field Campaign's free buffalo museum. Volunteers are wanted. They have immediate openings for field volunteers to help with our frontline patrols through June. We're also seeking summer volunteers who can help us conduct outreach and re-education, representing the Buffalo Field Campaign and the buffalo to Yellowstone visitors at our new free buffalo museum in West Yellowstone. And they have a legal and field internship for the fall and summer. Buffalo Field Campaign and Ally Western Watersheds Project is seeking a legal and field intern who can help with reviewing project files and documenting conditions in the field for several Forest Service grazing allotments in the West Yellowstone and Gardner Basin areas and creating legal documents. If you want to find out about the Buffalo Field Campaign, the best place to go is www.buffalofieldcampaign.org. If you have anything you want to donate to the Buffalo Field Campaign, send it to Buffalo Field Campaign, P.O. Box 957, West Yellowstone, Montana. The zip code is 59758. If you have any questions, give them a call at 406-646-0070. And do remember that the Buffalo Field Campaign is the only group working in the field every day in defense of the last wild buffalo in the United States. And the Unist'ot'en people, soft blockade on the Maurice River in British Columbia. Unist'ot'en people of the Wet'suwet'en Nation are maintaining a soft blockade, keeping pipeline workers and subcontractors out of their territories. The blockade is located 66 kilometers, a little over 50 miles, on the Maurice West Forest Service Road, south of the town of Houston, British Columbia. Hundreds of supporters, volunteers, recreationalists, and mushroom pickers have been able to cross into the guarded territory by showing respect to the territory's owners and answering some simple questions. Those questions are, who are you? Where do you come from? How long do you plan to stay? Are you working for the government or industry? What is your business here? How will your visit benefit the Unist'ot'en people? There were some people who have chosen not to answer any of the questions, and, of course, they were not permitted onto the lands. Some of the people rejected were outright racist and belligerent. Some people refused to recognize the authority of the territory owners, and some were simply unable to truthfully answer any of the questions until they could develop a relationship with the Unist'ot'en. The decision to control territory traffic came when workers for the proposed Apache Chevron fracking gas pipelines were caught in the territory last November after having been previously warned for trespassing. The Unist'ot'en have been leading a movement among the larger Wet'suwet'en population to stop all proposed pipelines, including fracking and tar sands pipelines, from crossing their territories. In 2008, the Unist'ot'en, alongside four other clans of the Wet'suwet'en, walked away from the British Columbia's Treaty Commission negotiation process. They found that since the 1997 Supreme Court of Canada's Delgamuukw versus Queen Court decision, government and industry have only escalated their activities on their lands at an alarming rate without meaningful consultation. Frida Husson, spokeswoman for the Unist'ot'en, stated, "The plaintiffs in the landmark case are the hereditary chiefs and their members. Government and industry are breaking their own laws when they choose to only consult with the Indian Act banned consuls. The propaganda writers for the Pacific Trails Pipeline like to say that they have 15 First Nation people support, when in fact they have only been talking to Indian Act communities. That has to stop. This struggle to protect our lands is not about holding out for financial gain. It is about protecting our lands from destructive practices from industry. Our actions will not only benefit our future generations, but everyone's future generations." The logging road leading into the territory is managed by the Canfor Logging Company, and Canfor is taking the lead to begin a meaningful process of consultation. The UNIS.N are welcoming this new relationship with Canfor and are hopeful that other industry projects will choose to begin asking permission rather than implementing projects without meaningful consultation. And here's the forest update for May of 2013. Forest update is prepared by Jody Frediani, forestry consultant for the Sierra Club. Redwood Meadows Ranch timber rights have been purchased by the Sempervirens Fund. The recent acquisition of timber rights by the Sempervirens Fund of 151 acres of the Redwood Meadows Ranch is win-win-win. The previous owners of these rights who had planned to log the forest gets paid without having to cut any trees. The Homeowners Association and individual property owners who own the timberland get the redwood preservation they were seeking. And Sempervirens Fund protects upper watershed lands along Mill Creek, which provides drinking water to the town of Davenport. In addition, the newly protected forest includes a number of old-growth redwoods, as well as providing habitat continuity to the adjacent Cemex and Coast Dairies properties. Thank you, Sempervirens Fund. And AB 904, a working forest management plan. On Friday, May 24th, AB 904 passed out of the Assembly Appropriations Committee. This week it will be heard on the Assembly floor. AB 904 will increase the allowable acreage for a single ownership from 2,500 acres to 15,000 acres for in-perpetuity harvest plans. Like NTMP or non-industrial timber management plans, these working forest management plans will receive full review one time only. All future operations may take place once the owner submits a notice to CAL FIRE. The public and all agencies will be cut out of any future CEQA equivalent review process, and counties will lose any future ability to appeal problematic harvests to the Board of Forestry. Neighbors will not even be given notice of commencement of logging. In addition, AB 904 will create a new vehicle called a Modified Working Forest Management Plan for timber owners with less than 160 acres. This will apparently give even more regulatory relief to those owners than the current NTMP program or the proposed WFMP. Again, these smaller parcels will undergo full agency review with opportunity for public comment and county appeal only once. All approved modified WFMPs will then be good forever. Originally, AB 904 was going to phase out NTMPs and replace them with WFMPs, which attempt to rectify some of the numerous problems identified during the past year by the reviewing agencies. However, industry threatened to oppose the bill, so its author chose to leave NTMPs alone. That means that landowners with less than 160 acres would be able to apply for any of the following: THPs, NTMPs, modified WFMPs, or WFMPs. Landowners with less than 2,500 acres would be able to apply for THPs, NTMPs, or WFMPs, and landowners with more than 15,000 acres could apply for a THP or a WFMP. In a further attempt to reduce regulatory oversight, AB 904 would allow major amendments such as adding acreage, changing silvicultural methods, etc., to be approved as a ministerial decision by CAL FIRE alone, rather than having to undergo the same review as a THP, which is currently required. All of this means that neighbors will have to simply shut up and put up with all future logging on adjacent lands under these forever plans, regardless of any change in circumstances. AB 904 makes no improvements under working forest management plans to deal with issues that have arisen under NTMPs that have created problems for public health and safety. The ostensible purpose of WFMPs and NTMPs is to provide more regulatory relief for non-industrial timberland owners in exchange for transitioning lands from clear-cutting to uneven age management, as well as slowing timberland conversion. Since clear-cutting is not allowed in the southern subdistrict and since local zoning limits development, we have little to gain and much to lose. This one-size-fits-all bill, created for the sparsely inhabited lands of California's north coast, is a poor fit for the urbanized forests of the Santa Cruz Mountains. However, the Santa Cruz County Board of Supervisors were unwilling to support Supervisor Leopold's request to have Santa Cruz and the southern subdistrict removed from the bill. One can only shake one's head and ask why. Major amendments have been recently submitted to Cal Fire on two older NTMPs, the Cal Poly and the Big Basin Water Company NTMPs. Cal Poly is adding acreage to their Valencia Creek harvest area, and the Big Basin Water Company wants to replace a failing culvert with another culvert rather than the previously agreed upon bridge. Under the forest practice rules, these major amendments must be reviewed in the same manner as any new THP or NTMP. However, Cal Fire has not posted these amendments or the relevant agency comments, RFP, RPF responses, etc. on their FTP site, as is customarily done for all new THPs and NTMPs under review. This means that the public is getting cut out of the review process. This is the response by Dwayne Shintaku, Cal Fire, to my request that those amendments be posted along with all relevant documents for the given NTMPs. As you know, our FTP site, THP Library, was initiated in 2005 in Santa Rosa, in 2009 in Redding and Fresno. This was initially set up as a pilot project we called e-posting. Unfortunately, the expansion of this pilot has been limited due to funding and staffing. Our clerical support are able to keep up with scanning new THPs, largely because of the speed provided by our electronic photocopier scanners in use today, but are also responsible for other required duties such as FPS data entry, archiving historic harvest documents, management of the required hard copy official records, responding to any PRA requests, and the compilation of administrative records and the scanning of administrative harvest documents like exemptions and emergency notices. Even though we appreciate and share your desires to have everything posted online, we are not budgeted or staffed to make this happen right now. I do believe we could provide you with timely copies of amendments and plans if you make the request, but for us to post all previously approved NTMPs back to 1991 would be a huge, costly undertaking. If you choose to make a request to receive a copy of an NTMP or major amendment, staff can make you a CD copy of the entire NTMP for $10. I'm sorry, this is the best solution we can offer at this time. For the record, Jody adds, I did not ask that all previously approved NTMPs be posted online, though that's not a bad idea. What I did request was that when a major amendment was submitted to a particular NTMP, that the previously approved NTMP be posted, along with all the documents generated in the review of the amendment, as is currently done for all THPs and NTMPs. And Jody is the forestry consultant for the Loma Prieta chapter of the Sierra Club, and we thank Jody for her monthly forestry updates. And rodenticides on illegal marijuana crops harm wildlife. In this story by Murata Gabriel, Greta M. Wingert, J. Mark Higley, Shane Krogan, Warren Sargent, and Deanna L. Clifford for wildlife.org. Another mortality signal on the radio collar of a Pacific fisher pulses on a wet spring morning, and fear of a repeat of the previous spring's mortalities looms in the backs of our minds. Hoopa tribal biologists scramble to recover the fisher quickly so that a necropsy can be performed to determine the cause of death. The field crew reports back that the fisher is not dead, but is lethargic and lurching on the ground when it attempts to seek cover from the approaching biologists. A conference call among researchers, a wildlife pathologist, and a veterinary toxicologist follows to determine the next course of action. Unfortunately, the consensus is a humane euthanization. Though testing is ongoing, this is likely the sixth monitored fisher in California that has died from a second-generation anticoagulant rodenticide, or SGAR, toxicosis since 2009. Linking SGARs to multiple deaths of a rare forest carnivore has been an alarming discovery. Even more unsettling, we are learning that these deaths appear to be linked to illegal marijuana cultivation on community and public lands, a finding that raises serious concerns for the health of many species of wildlife, including fishers, an Endangered Species Act candidate. Beginning in 2008, full necropsies, including toxicological scans done at the University of California's Davis School of Veterinary Medicine and the California Animal Health and Food Safety Laboratory, have been conducted to determine proximate and ultimate causes of mortality for fishers from the Hoopa Valley Reservation Fisher Project, Sierra Nevada Adaptive Management Project, and the U.S. Forest Service King River Fisher Project. These ongoing long-term demographic projects encompass both tribal community forests within the HVRFP and public lands, including Yosemite National Park and Sierra National Forest in this SNAMP and KRFP study areas. Toxicology screening of 58 fishers from these community and public lands revealed that nearly 80% of the fishers had been exposed to anticoagulant rodenticides poisons, with 96% of those exposures being SGARs. Results that we published in the PLOS-1. Concerned about this trend, we led an interdisciplinary collaboration including multiple stakeholders from the Hoopa Tribe, Integrated Ecology Research Center, U.S. Forest Service, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, CAHFS, UC Davis, SNAMP, and California Department of Fish and Wildlife, pooling together resources and expertise for a comprehensive approach to evaluate this emerging threat. Spatial modeling suggested that fishers were exposed to SGARs ubiquitously throughout the study areas, contradicting current thought that wildlife were at greatest risk to these toxicants near agricultural, urban, or peri-urban settings, where the pesticides are legally used to eradicate or suppress rodent pest populations. However, lifetime monitoring the California fisheries showed that most of the exposed or poisoned individuals never overlapped with any of those land use types. In addition, the use of SGARs within the study areas in adjacent timberlands or within campgrounds would violate current state and federal regulations. As a result, our suspicions gravitated toward undiscovered illicit uses throughout the project areas. These suspicions were essentially confirmed after federal, state, and local law enforcement officers verified that the poisons were present at most marijuana cultivation sites found on public and tribal lands. And this goes on for a long time, and unfortunately, I don't have a chance to finish it all, but I want to read the final paragraph. It is a common misrepresentation that it is the responsibility of law enforcement to not only protect our natural resources at illegal marijuana sites, but also to remove pesticides and remediate the sites. In truth, there is currently no standardized system for gross site remediation. Most toxicants are left in place untouched out of concern for the safety of the officers who are not trained to handle and transport these highly toxic chemicals, especially in the frequent situations where these chemicals are unlabeled. And that's all the time we have for the Earth First Update. The Earth First Update is a production of Earth First Radio and is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz every Thursday evening at 9 o'clock. You can hear a rebroadcast on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 3 o'clock on Fridays. And if you're in Moscow, Idaho, you can hear a rebroadcast of the Earth First Update on KRFP Radio Free Moscow, 92.5 FM on Monday nights at 9:30 p.m. If you'd like to download or listen to a podcast of this show, go to radioforall.net. That's radio, the number, forall.net. Thank you for listening to the Earth First Update this week, and do tune in next week for another Earth First Update.